It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. On Farmer Fridays, we take calls and questions all throughout the show. We don't have any theme today. There's no topic that, oh no, I got to listen to him talk about X, Y, and Z for a while before I could call in with my question. No, we just want to hear from you. Want to hear what's going on your farm. I know a lot of guys are getting started into harvest. Others are finishing up harvest already. And yesterday, I believe it was, we were talking to somebody out in California. They were planting crops. So yeah, just lots of things going on in the field. So we'd love to hear from you. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can email us, radio@agphd.com. You can also find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty or Darren Hefty. All right, so I just came into the studio about 5 minutes ago, and I'm like, wow, I got 5 minutes before the show starts. I was out in some of our fields. We've got hybrid trials, soybean variety trials. We got every different trait that's on the market, even the new Xtend Flex that we hope to have on the United States market here next year or next growing season. And just doing some comparisons, we've got soybeans on our farm all the way up into, so for our farm, normal maturity is probably a late group one soybean to an early group two. And with maturity groups in soybeans, every one group you move up is about 10 days of maturity difference. So if you've got a group three versus a group two, it's about 10 days later. So we plant, like I say, late group ones, early group twos, and all the way up to a group 2.5 is turning right now on our farm. And these were planted the end of May. So if we would have planted them a month sooner when we planted some of our beans out in our fields, they would be a lot farther along. We are starting to take some soybeans out of the field on our farm. We've been harvesting some corn this week, mostly on the lighter spots of fields and that kind of thing. So we're just getting going, but there are other growers that are really rolling along in harvest, and just depends on where you're at. The drought definitely hit us. We were looking, well, this was interesting, and you might find this interesting for you as well. We saw some tip back on some of the hybrids in our corn trial. And you may think, all right, I've heard you talk before, maybe that's short of a nutrient, or maybe it's even a micronutrient like boron. That's one, if you don't fill out to the end of the tip, that can sometimes be the culprit. But what was interesting, it was around 105-day corn, give or take a couple of days, that wasn't filled out to the tip. When we look at 110-day corn, it's filled out to the tip. When we look at 100-day corn, it was filled out to the tip. And it wasn't a nutrient difference because they were all fertilized the same. It ended up in this case being just when was the flowering date. And we had on our farm some hot days, some 100-degree days the last week of July. And those 105s were flowering right then. So if you happen to hit that just at the wrong window, it really cost you in yield this year. And that was certainly something that we saw on our farm. I'll talk more about that in just a second. I should probably jump to the phone lines. Josh is hanging on there. He's calling from Oregon. Josh, how are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
Good. Good. What's up on your farm, or what questions have you got for us today?
I have a question on organic matter and nitrogen. Okay. I took a soil sample, a 6-inch soil sample in early spring, and it was around 20 pounds. Then I just took one last week or so, and we're in a wheat Kimpala rotation, so we're about to get ready to plant, and it was about 50 pounds. Do you expect more, and we're about 2% organic matter.
Okay.
More nitrogen out of that organic matter since we've got 20, 30 pounds already? Would you expect more going into the next year after we plant?
Okay, great question. When we look at organic matter levels on a soil test, what we use, one of those things that we use it for on our farm is looking at our nitrogen recommendations. And normally where we're at on our farm, we figure we're going to get about 20 pounds of nitrogen out of each 1% of organic matter during the growing season. Most of that is going to come when it warms up. So most of it's going to come in June, July, August. Now it's starting to cool down on our farm, although we've got some warm days coming up here ahead of us. But for the most part, the average temperatures are starting to cool down. So that mineralization is going to slow down just a little bit. So I think you've got a majority of what you're going to get. If you've already got 30 pounds, maybe you got another five or maybe 10. For the most part, though, you're done. So I would figure that 50, when are you seeding the wheat?
Oh, here in the next week or two.
Okay. Yeah. So you're kind of figuring out what that fertility plan is going to be. I would say right now that's about it. And I just run with that 50 that you got, figure that into what you're going to apply and go from there. Now, how do you like to do nitrogen on your farm and growers in your area? Are you putting a bunch out at planting, or are you waiting until spring and then going back out with a stream bar or something like that?
Everybody around here puts it all on during seeding because we only get about 10 inches of rain a year. So
okay,
it's pretty dry.
Okay. Yeah. It all depends on which part of Oregon you're on.
Yes. We're on the dry side.
Okay. Yeah. And I would say the same thing happens here. We're typically in South Dakota in lower rainfall environments most years, at least where a lot of the rain is being grown or where a lot of the wheat is being grown. So yeah, they like to get it out up front because otherwise those late applications, you don't know if you're going to get enough moisture to get them in. So what do you figure? How many pounds of N per unit or per bushel of wheat that you're growing, are you going to put on?
Oh, usually, I guess my dad always told me that whatever we take off, we put back in, and we usually are left with, 40 or 50 pounds left in the soil. So try to get around 120 to 150 into the profile.
Okay.
To get to that 70 bushel crop on average.
Yep. Yeah, it's interesting. As you travel around the world just a little bit, that fluctuates, and part of it is based on what the organic matter level is in the soil. We're talking with Josh out in Oregon here about getting some nitrogen figured out for a wheat crop he's going to be seeding here in another week. Josh, thank you so much. Really appreciate the call today, and good luck with your crop.
Oh, I had one more question.
Oh, you bet. We're up against a commercial break, Josh. Just hang on there for a second, and we'll get you right back in a couple of minutes. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Stay tuned.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Resistant weeds got you down? Knock out tough-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds like Palmer amaranth and water hemp with Tough 5EC. Manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, Tough 5EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of actively growing broadleaf weeds. Add Tough 5EC to your post-emergence tank mix for enhanced control with no concerns about residual or carryover injury. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Together, we can get tough on weeds. Always read and follow label instructions.
Downtime during spraying can lead to huge yield losses. Keep rolling with the Pentair Hypro Force Field. This pump features a unique self-regulated chamber that allows the pump to run dry while eliminating cracked seals, so you can spray longer and more reliably. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. Condition your grain for ideal moisture with the Endzone. Visit farmshopmfg.com for more.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on Farmer Friday. Taking your calls and questions all throughout the show today at 844 844- 44 Ag PhD. Now, just before the break, we were talking to Josh from Oregon about organic matter and mineralization and just the nitrogen needs for his upcoming wheat crop. And Josh, you said you had one more question, so hopefully I can help you out with that too.
Okay. On as far as leaching in our soil CEC is around between 10 and 12, and we average rainfall between 10 and 13 on a good year, inches a year. Would you worry much about nitrogen leaching or leaching in general?
Well, when you're putting on 120 pounds and you've got a 12 CEC, I think you're going to be fine. We look at that CEC and our soil's just a rough figure. We can hold about 10 times whatever our CEC is. So if you've got a CEC of 10, you can hold about 100 pounds of nitrogen. And right now what you're talking about is 120 to maybe 150. I think you're going to be in a pretty good spot when you don't have much for rainfall.
Okay. I've heard people been leaching and we just don't get a lot of moisture.
Nope. You know, we've got a lot of growers in our state in the same boat where they just haven't had a problem, but it's something that you can keep an eye on. We definitely don't want to waste money on nitrogen. And, you know, for non-farmers that are listening to the show today, this is one of the things. So you hear Josh talking about this. He's not trying to put on excess. He's just trying to replace what the last crop took out of the soil and what this crop needs. And if he fits that just right in a low rainfall environment, getting it out in the soil early allows him to get it down into the root system of that crop. So he's not going to lose any of it. I think it's fantastic, Josh. I think you're doing a great job.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks. Let's dive into some questions I got emailed here. This one comes from Gary in Montana. And Gary said, I just wanted to give you guys a heads up. I had talked to you a few months ago. And in the meantime, I have passed my CCA test. That's Certified Crop Advisor for anybody who's not familiar with that. Passed my CCA test for the Rocky Mountain region. Because remote testing was available, I didn't have to drive all the way to Great Falls to do it. As a fieldman, I worked in Ohio for 23 years, and then I got a chance to come back to Wyoming. I've been here for 22 years now already. Wow. Got a lot of experience, Gary. And Gary says, there's always more to learn. I couldn't agree more. And Gary says, I wish you guys and everybody listening a safe and successful harvest season. Gary, thank you so much. We really appreciate that. And yeah, the same to you. Stay safe this fall. And congratulations to you on getting that CCA. I know that's a big deal. I know you're working for that. So good job. Really, really proud of you. Right. I get another question. This one comes from Josh. He said, yesterday you guys were talking about fall spraying, and you talked specifically about using Valor in the fall. I'm in eastern South Dakota as well, and I'm fighting water hemp in our soybeans. That's been a big problem for us. Wondering if a fall application or if some other product in the fall would be able to help with water hemp. You know, if you can get your pre-emerge herbicide on in the spring, Josh, I don't know if I would necessarily switch to a fall application for a summer annual weed like water hemp. We're looking at the winter annual weeds. So things like mare's tail, for example, in South Dakota is one that if you're in a no-till situation and you have a lot of mare's tail, the fall app is really beneficial. You certainly could put fall valor out with the idea that I'm going to put it on fairly late. And I've got some ground that I might not have time to get my pre on in the spring. That would definitely be a better alternative than skipping the pre in the spring. But as long as you feel like you can get over your acres and get that spring applied pre out there, that would be the best way to go because you wouldn't lose any of that valor ahead of that springtime. So you have maximum strength. Let's go over to the phone lines here. We've got Jeff with us down in Kansas. Jeff, how are you today?
Jeff, this is Jeff here. Doing really well. We're enjoying the nice weather, and it's been pretty beautiful skies out here the last few days.
Excellent. Yeah, that's always fun. It's what I love about being one of the things I love about being on the farm is just when you get some good weather, there isn't a better place to be. How about harvest down in your neck of the woods? Is that rolling along here, or just about to start?
Yeah, things are starting to heat up here in our neighborhood. I do see quite a few combines starting to roll through the dryland corn and into the limited irrigation corn. Also, a lot of wheat drills starting to move around here. So I think we are well on our way to being busy.
Yeah, no doubt about that. Now, you mentioned limited irrigation, and what does that mean in your area? Is that 300? Is that 200? What kind of level are you looking at when to term it limited irrigation?
Yeah, that's a good question. Most of our systems are on a quarter mile, so a full circle would be about 120, 125 acres. And yeah, that 300 gallon range, maybe even 400 gallon per minute range would be a kind of a break point for what you would call limited irrigation. Some of our way we're set up on some of our irrigation, we've got one well going to multiple sprinklers. So you kind of, you water one, you move to the next and move to the next, even though that well might be 800 gallons per minute, you're spreading it out over a lot more acres. So that would be a limited irrigation scenario too.
Just got in a good conversation with a couple of corn breeders yesterday. And one of the things that we were talking about, and I had mentioned Kansas and Western Nebraska, and I said, I know there's a number of growers in those areas with limited irrigation. What are you looking at for them? And they said, oh, we're really happy that you said that, because we're actually doing a lot of trial work now when we've got 300 gallon per minute pumps, and that's it, rather than full-scale 1,000-gallon or more type capacity. And they said it's really interesting the differences that you see in the hybrids, and I'm sure you've noticed that too, that some can handle that a lot better than others.
Yeah, there are varieties that do better in that scenario. You're looking probably a little bit more for drought tolerance and lowering your planting rates, and you're really trying to pay attention to residue, leaving some residue out there going in. Into that really helps out a lot. And it's amazing what can be done. You know, I've got some neighbors that I watch too. They just do an awesome job managing their irrigation in that kind of setup. They may even have 200 gallons per minute and split the circle in half and have wheat on one side and corn on the other, or add in sorghum into the mix. You know, there's some options. It kind of, in a way, it's maybe more challenging, more exciting than just going corn on corn or corn bean rotation, where you just you kind of got to think about it maybe a little bit more and try to be more strategic about what you do.
I like your term. It's more exciting, and I would say more stressful too, maybe. But but yeah, it is. It's definitely different. And like you say, though, if you're willing to put in the extra work and the extra mental capacity here, just to think about these things and think about all those scenarios, there is a chance to potentially make more profit too.
Yes, there is. You know, when you look at the profit per gallon of that 800 gallon minute well that I have running to two or three pivots, you know, there's a lot more dollars that I'm making, because I'm, you know, I'm putting corn out early and trying to hit, you know, almost full season potential, and then I've got a late corn and sorghum on the other circles. And whenever we catch a rain, you know, get a good rain, we'll pull off that first planted full irrigation and go water on those other circles to kind of catch them up, and then, you know, you try to plant a little bit of an early season corn and you get done, and then you can just focus the water on that the sorghum and the late season corn, and you know, really it turns out pretty good. I'm pretty excited about you know, what we're going to see there, and we've done this for a little while, so we kind of already got an idea.
Yeah, I started off the show talking about how we've got a hybrid trial where we've got corn all the way from 75-day maturity to 117, and we saw tip back right around the 105-day corns because we hit this hot week, like 100-degree plus temps. Well, not a whole lot of plus here, but 100-degree temps for a week, and it was right when those were flowering. And I love how you said that, Jeff, that you're kind of timing out, hey, I might use an early corn here, and I can pair that up with a sorghum or something else, and then I can use the water at this part of the season here and at a different part of the season over there. I don't know. Hats off to you. That's really good, and to be able to manage a tough situation where you only have so much water and you've got to ration it out just perfectly. Great job. Really appreciate it. We're talking with Jeff down in Kansas. Jeff, we're up against a break here, but it's been great talking to you. Good luck. Stay safe this harvest.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
You bet. Yeah, that's really fun, thinking about how do you make the best out of everything. It's why I love Farmer Fridays. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Mm-hmm. When it comes to trusted herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. And you certainly know Nufarm exclusive Weedmaster. For decades, Weedmaster has been the go-to herbicide for consistent burndown weed control in a huge variety of crops, and in range and pasture management, too. Don't let yield-robbing weeds stand in the way of your progress or profits. Nufarm and Weedmaster Herbicide, here to help.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Deese supply representative today.
What's the next big thing from the Roundup Ready Extend crop system? A soybean built on Roundup Ready to Extend technology, or one with glufosinate tolerance? Great news, it's both. Expected soon. Extend Flex Soybeans. Always read and follow IRM where applicable. Grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Commercial availability in 2021 is dependent on regulatory approval. No dicamba may be used in crop with Extend Flex Soybeans unless and until approved. And no dicamba formulations are currently registered for such use in the 2021 season. Learn more at extendflexsoy.com.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support. Let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. And we'll head down to Kentucky right now. We've got Wesley, who's been holding on there for a while. Wesley, thanks for hanging on there.
No problem.
So how are things going down in Kentucky? You guys harvesting there?
Some guys are. We're kind of just waiting to get busy. It's taking its time drying down on the corn side of things, but everything's looking pretty good. We're just it seems like it's taking a while to dry down. Some of the bigger guys have started rolling through some corn, but the lowest I've heard is probably 18%. It's been running around 20 to 22.
Okay. Yeah, for us, we got started. We found some sandy hills that were at 16, which we thought, okay, we better get those pretty quick here before those corn plants fall apart. And we quickly got into the sweet spots of the field, and they were up in the low to mid-20s. So it's like, man, it stinks that we can't just go all the way through a field right now. And it's so early, we aren't really worried about snow or anything bad coming up, that we're just going to wait a little bit. We're going to switch over and do a few beans. How about your beans? Are beans close in your area, or they got a ways to go now?
My neighbor, he planted some early variety full season beans. They are looking like they are pretty close to being harvested. As of everything else, my full season beans are starting to turn yellow and die. Now, the double crop beans we planted behind wheat, they are still green and growing. and they're looking really, really good. We've been fortunate on the rains, and I think they're going to do very good. They're starting to do some pod filling now, but it won't be long before they start turning.
Yeah, that's right. So what maturity group are those double crop? Are they an early four, or what maturity do you plant?
It's usually a mid four, mid to later four. I've tried some early varieties on the double crop, like some twos. And if you don't hit the range just right, they have a really hard time making. But we have done some, and they've been the best beans we've had if we can catch the rains. We don't have any irrigation, so we have to just do our best with what the year gives us.
Yeah, what kind of year was the wheat? I know, talking to some guys earlier this year, there's some frost that happened. There were some crazy things.
Yeah.
And did you get hit by that too?
We did. We had two frosts, and my earliest maturing wheat got hit pretty at the worst time by the first frost, and my later maturing wheat got hit at the worst time on the second frost. So it was kind of a double whammy on my side of the wheat. But I averaged about 60 bushel, which is just a little under our farm average. So it could have been a lot worse. Some guys were cutting their wheat just for straw because it was so bad. And then I heard some people saying they were making over 100 bushel wheat. I guess it was just dependent on the area and the type of maturity on the wheat, I guess.
That's like they say, sometimes it's better to be lucky than good, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how a harvest turns out for you. I'm glad you're catching the rains. I'm glad stuff looks good. It's been dry on our farm for sure and in a lot of parts of the country. So I think you're right. Just like you talked about on the wheat, there's going to be some really good stuff and then some disappointing things too.
That's right. I had a question for you.
Sure.
Before I got off here. We do wheat behind wheat. Wheat and double crop beans, and then after we get the beans off, we come in and plant wheat again. So we have a pretty narrow window on getting, groundwork and fertilized spread and everything. And I'm just starting to grid sample some fields, trying to get everything on the grid sampling side of things. And I was told I was going to do variable rate fertilize, and I was told by a few people that on wheat, you need to flat rate your fertilize for nitrogen reasons, and I was just going to talk to you about it and see what your opinion was. Do I need to, would variable rate fertilize be beneficial on the wheat, or does it need to be flat rated?
Yeah, if you get a complete blend, that makes it tricky. So where we've done the variable rate, especially on things like P, K, and micronutrients, and getting those right, and then sulfur and nitrogen, maybe something that you flat rate, or maybe you do a totally different pattern than what you were doing on your NP and K, or I'm sorry, your P and K. Yeah, I would still variable rate, even if wheat's in the rotation. I just probably wouldn't get crazy on varying up that nitrogen rate. That's going to be the only thing. So if you got multiple bins, you can keep that nitrogen rate fairly stable if you think you need to, if your yields are going to be pretty close going across that field. But you could certainly address the P and K deficiency areas. If you got some areas that need twice as much P or K or micros, if you've got them in a different bin, that would allow you to do it.
Okay. All righty. That's all I was wondering. I appreciate the advice.
You bet. Thanks a lot. Really appreciate it, Wesley. Stay safe this harvest.
You too. Take care. See ya.
Let's head over to Wisconsin. We got Joe with us right now. Joe, how's it going over there?
Not too bad here. We're just trying to get started with soybean harvest here today.
Excellent. Okay, so talk to me about that. We had a lot of growers that got beans in early this year, and I know we had some beans that we got in the earliest we've planted for a while. Were you on that camp, too, of putting stuff in late April, or did you get stuff in early May?
I have been planting in April, and this was planted April 24th, I believe.
Okay.
So, and I like to get these early beans in early so we can get harvest started early here, too, like we are today.
Yeah,
but just trying to get some yield monitors calibrated here, so we really don't have a handle on yield just yet. But moisture is just seems like it's right there, 13 to 14, right where we want to start. So.
Yeah, absolutely. That's perfect. Now, will you try a cover crop after that? I know you've done some cover crop on your farm. Is this a situation where you could do that too?
I'm not planning on cover crop. Some of my experiences have kept soil too cold in the spring this far north, so we're pretty much just no-tilling anymore.
Okay. Yeah, it's interesting. Everybody's system is a little different, and I know we've talked to some guys that are up in North Dakota doing strip-till in it, and they were feeling like they've gotten past that. But again, I'm expecting to get to a couple of questions here on cover crops yet today in terms of, well, do I burn stuff off now? How late do I let it grow? And how big do I let it get? And all those things. And it's not this slam dunk. All you have to do is plant a cover crop and forget about it and everything's going to turn out great.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. It takes a lot of experimenting and not saying I'm not going to do it again, but not this year.
Yep. How about the corn? What's the corn looking like in your part of Wisconsin?
I would say, well, we're not really worried about corn just yet. I usually concentrate on beans to try to get them out of the way. But corn is probably a week off. A lot of it's right at black layer right now. So
okay.
It's come along. A lot of tire spot, a lot of corn leaf blights, stuff like that have shown up late. But I don't think it'll affect the yield too much, possibly a little bit of test weight. But I still think most of this corn is right there at black layer, so I don't think it's going to hurt it too much.
I mentioned earlier in the show, I was just talking with a couple of different corn breeders yesterday, and one of the things that they mentioned was tar spot, and they were talking about plots they had in northern Illinois and up into Wisconsin and kind of that region that's been hit with tar spot. They said they're seeing some better than others, but it's not really, it's more of an observation. It's not that they've been able to do much breeding towards tar spot just yet. Have you found a few hybrids that work for you that avoid that, or has tar spot not been a big yield robber yet for you?
No, it's been here for the last 3 years, probably, including this year. But most of it has came in late enough where it hasn't affected us too much personally. But I know of some growers that have had problems with it showing up in early August and pretty much devastating fields. So, yeah, and I think some of that was variety related. From what I understand.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some that are tolerating a lot better than others. Hey, Joe, thanks for the call today. Good luck on your soybean harvest, and we'll talk to you again soon. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck. How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at openskyherbicide.com.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
As a little girl, I always wanted to run the combine because it meant I was helping Dad. And Dad always said, farmers are helpers. I'm teaching that to my daughters, that farmers help our family, our neighbors, and our community. It's what I do at work. I help farmers get the equipment they need. My name is Kim. I'm a farmer, and I work for Case IH.
Case IH, built by farmers.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds.
Vellum is Rotem North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Vellum. For more information, visit vellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, nobody scrutinizes performance like you do. And acre to acre, year to year, generation to generation, the consistent performance of Asgro brand soybeans helps to keep your profitability out in front, offering leading agronomic expertise and 100% exclusive genetics for strong yield potential. Ask your dealer how much further you can grow when Asgro leads the way. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean and weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and its burn down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans, like, literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit Valent.com/Perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. It's Farmer Friday. That means we're taking your calls and agronomic questions all throughout the show. And those phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head up to Southern Ontario. We've got Mike with us right now. Wants to talk a little strip till. Mike, how are you doing?
Good, Darren. How are you?
I'm doing excellent. We have started harvest on our farm, and you can probably tell my voice, my speed just picks up a little bit. There's a little enthusiasm, a little fire there. I'm excited. I love this time of year.
Well, maybe you can get out there after the show.
Yeah, I will be. I just came in 5 minutes ahead, and I didn't want to make Janelle nervous. Our hometown here is having homecoming and that kind of thing too, and Brian's doing some stuff with the kids with that, and so he's like, "You got to do the show today all by yourself," and I'm like, "I don't want to do a show by myself. I want to be out in the field." All right, yeah, let's jump into what you want to talk about, Mike. What are you thinking on strip till?
Well, we've been strip tilling for about 4 years, and the question I have is, like, up until now, you know, in a corn-soybean rotation, we've been putting the corn strips down in exactly the same spot.
Okay.
And you know what? We were starting to have a healthy debate about whether we should be moving those strips over 8 inches or something, you know, or do we just keep going in the same spot? Because with GPS, that's pretty easy, eh?
Right, right. You know, okay, this isn't a new debate. We had this debate actually with the world record dryland corn grower, and he was at the time just the world record holder, period, Francis Childs over on the eastern side of Iowa. And we were talking about this because we were talking about building strips and fertilizing in the strips and using GPS guidance to get that going. And this is 15 years ago or so, and Francis said, okay, I'm listening to you guys talk about this, and in a corn-soybean rotation, doesn't it make sense that corn would need a certain fertility mix, soybeans might need a slightly different mix, and you could have corn in one path, you could have beans in a different path, and just stay on those same paths? And my response to him, the first thing I thought was, okay, first of all, he knows a lot more about fertility and how to make yield out of it than I do at that point anyway, and I said, what about nematodes? What about problems that are going to come up, like disease and those kinds of things? If you keep in the same spot every time, won't it be a problem? He thought we'd get by without it just because we're doing it every other year, that we'd have plenty of time for that to dissipate. But I don't know. I don't know which way is the right way on this to think. We do move our strips around, but that's not saying that's the best way for everybody.
So would you move them over like 8 inches? Because like we make about an 8-inch strip and we're in 30-inch rows. So, you know, or would you go right in the middle, because then you're going into a lot of tractor tracks, eh?
Yeah, and I kind of like that just to try and break up any compaction in those spots. Oh, man, and here we go. Now Brian is jumping back on. He wants to get in this discussion. All right, Brian, what do you think about it? We're talking strip till and getting – do you stay in the same tracks? Do you move over halfway between the rows and try to address the tractor tire compaction? What do you think is the best in corn, soybean rotation, and 30-inch rows?
Well, you absolutely have to move over some. There's a little bit of allelopathy if you're going to be right in the row and you've got past year's residue to contend with. So your stand isn't going to be as good. It's harder to get all that ripped up. So I'm not saying you have to go 15 inches over, but you got to go at least a few inches over. So it all depends on what a person wants to do. We have typically gone over 15 inches and then we've gone back. Maybe not the full 15 inches, but we've gone back some. So, I mean, a lot of ways to do it, but I just would say I'm not going to plant in that same row. Now, if you wanted to do in the same row, you certainly can. There are people who have done ridge till for years, and that's a little variation of that, but then they're heaping dirt into that row again. You're not really doing that with strip till exactly.
Yeah. Well, that leads me to my next question, I'll qualify that a little bit. After we harvest the corn, we'll come in and we'll plant beans in 15-inch rows. So, sure. You know, we've got that band of fertilizer there and maybe some residual after the corn crop. Is it reasonable to expect that those beans in 15-inch rows are going to be able to pick up some residual fertilizer out of that strip?
Yes, for sure they are. And that, too, you know, if you're going to plant in 15-inch rows, I'm just going to try to, as much as I can, not be right on top of last year's corn row because you won't have the best bean stand. Yep. But as you know, it's not as important to get a perfect bean stand like it is a perfect corn stand. But nevertheless, yes, if there is some extra left over, that's great. It's just we got to be realistic as to what's going to be left over, because especially as yields have just gotten so much better here in the last few years, you know, I think for a lot of us, we have had kind of the same fertility program we've done for a while. Well, if your yields are going up and you don't continue to put more fertilizer on, how much is actually going to be left? So that's probably the number one concern I have with soybeans a lot of times. When you look just running the straight numbers in the United States anyway, what's applied for soybean fertility versus what's removed, they're two dramatically different things. And what's applied for corn is barely enough for the corn. So what I'm saying is, on average in the United States, we've got the stats, we are not putting on enough fertilizer for a two-year cycle of corn and beans, and that's saying that on average, a lot of farmers out there are depleting their soils just slightly over time. So just make sure one way or the other you're getting enough fertilizer out there. I don't care necessarily how you do it, but yes, there most likely will be some left. Now, I will tell you, too, if let's say you put on a really big rate for corn and had a bad yield, like this year on our farm, we've got some bad spots because we didn't have rain for the last 2.5 months of the year. I mean, not a lot of bad spots, but we have some. So there's going to be a lot of fertilizer left from last year. You might see a little bit of waviness. Let's say it was wheat or something like that. We have seen that before where there's a little waviness where a lot of fertility right over that band, you know, and so there's some plants doing great and others not so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know what, we're mostly no-till, and now that we're strip-till, you know, the tillage is really very minimal. While we just don't do any unless we do some drainage, you know, and then we'll do regular tillage in front of corn. But, you know, it's our only time to really get fertilizer in the ground, you know, and so we actually are pretty, we feel like we're putting on pretty high rates in the strip just because we like it in the soil rather than broadcasting it on top in a no-till situation.
Yeah, it's always interesting. And we've had a few calls today about dry areas, that getting stuff down in the ground is really a good strategy. I think if you're in the 15-inch row beans, 30-inch row corn, to me, I would want to do a lot of my variable rate type stuff and get that out there on a broadcast basis and then feed the corn crop. What I think the corn crop's going to need are fairly close, and that would avoid any inconsistencies in fertility as you head through. But there's certainly a lot of ways to go about it.
Yeah, but you're dead on right putting some down in the ground when you have the chance. That's the big reason why with no-till on our farm, we switched away from it because we didn't get enough fertility down deep for the root systems.
Yeah, I've always heard that from listening to you guys, and that's why, you know what, we like putting quite a bit down and in the strip just for that reason, and then we will broadcast over the top on a variable rate, you know, just to top up some areas that might need it, you know.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, with some of these nutrients, they move fairly well in soil. So putting them on the soil surface is fine. But our problem here is, and, you know, it's the same thing for you, we've got a colder climate. So we're frozen most of the year. We have heavy soil. I don't know what you have, but, I mean, we would probably have a lot less rainfall. So when we're dry in heavy soil, our phosphorus, zinc, copper, I mean, those nutrients just aren't moving down in the soil. That was the problem we were having with laying it on the soil surface. So, yeah, I'm with you. When you can put some down below, that's a good deal.
Yeah. Okay, well, thanks for your input. We've got some real nice crops up here, and we're certainly looking forward to harvest in about a week.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, hope it all turns out good for you, and stay safe this fall. Thanks for calling in.
Thank you. Bye.
It's Farmer Friday on our show today, taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. You can send us an email as well, radio@agphd.com. Get this one from CO. He said, wow, you guys are doing a great job. I wish I could give you 1,000,000 likes. But that'd be awesome, CO. If you figure out how to do that, we will accept them. That would be really cool. No, thank you. We really appreciate your kind words. And we're really excited about what we're doing here too. And it is harvest season, so that makes it even more fun for me. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
If you're looking to get the most out of your foliar nutrition and fungicide programs, ask your ag retailer about Nutex EDA from Sipchem Agro. Nutex EDA has been proven to increase foliar micronutrient tissue levels and maintain those levels for an extended period of time. When tank mixed with fungicides, Nutex EDA helps support plant health, resulting in higher quality and yields. Nutex EDA is an affordable and effective solution that should be part of every grower's high-yield toolbox.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you, to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic pesticides from Atticus LLC. Atticus offers a vast portfolio of branded generic fungicides, herbicides, and insecticides for row crops. Atticus puts grassroots experience and common sense logic to work to make product selection easier and on your terms. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit atticusllc.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Make every bushel count with the Endzone Bin Fan Control System from Farm Shop MFG. Harvesting soybeans too dry causes shatter loss in the field and revenue loss from shrink when you go to market. With the Endzone, you can combine higher moisture beans earlier in the season to reduce field loss, then use your bin fans to naturally reach your target moisture. Condition your grain for maximum profit with the Endzone. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Oh my goodness, did you see Bob's gorgeous soybean rows?
Totally. I couldn't believe how clean, weed-free his entire field looked. I'm like, so jealous.
I heard he started using this new post-applied residual herbicide called Perpetuo, and its burn down and long-lasting residual power is making his soybeans like literally the talk of the town.
Ah, so Perpetuo's his secret.
Yep.
Talk to your retailer or visit valent.com/perpetuo to learn more. Always read and follow label instructions.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. We're taking your calls and agronomic questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. You got Adam with us in Southwest Minnesota. All right, Adam, you heard the strip till talk. What are you thinking? What's your angle on it?
Well, that did fire up my question, and so we're new to this game, and my plan this year is to apply our hog manure in a strip with I just ordered some VTI units for our tanks, and they're hopefully coming this week, next week. And my question is, my manure tank tractors aren't set up for RTK guidance right now, and my planter is. But my question is if I apply the manure in the strip, but in the springtime, either, I don't know yet if I want to run a strip freshener or not, but if I try to plant right on the row, one, is that manure going to be a little bit too hot? And two, if I happen to be off the strip, and how much am I going to set that new corn back by being short on N? Or short on nutrients, I guess.
Yep. Okay, Adam, those are both questions that we looked at real hard when we started strip tilling years ago. We have done a bunch of manure. The big thing that I would tell you is we are concerned about salt. So my two questions for you are, how deep are you going to put the manure, and at what rate?
So, right, I'm assuming those applicators, like I said, we have not run them yet, but I'm thinking it's going to be within 6 to 8 inches, roughly.
Okay.
And we normally go about 3,000 to 3,500 gallons an acre, of finished hog manure.
Yeah. Yep. Well, hog manure is pretty hot, and so 3,000 to 3,500 gallons. You can certainly do that if you want to, but at only 6 to 8 inches deep, I'm going to guess it's probably going to be pushing it a little bit. Now, it depends a little bit.
Okay.
It depends a lot on how much rainfall you get. If you get if you get enough rain, it'll dissipate the salt, and you should be okay. But I can take you back.
Sure.
This is probably 15-plus years ago. We actually did some clear down to 20 inches deep, and we did dairy manure at 6,000 gallons, 8,000 gallons, 10,000 gallons. The best yield was 6,000 gallons. The 8,000 was close. The 10,000, we started dropping off. And the point was, we had reached our salt level. And as I say all this, so for any of our listeners out there, I just want you to understand, all these things are relative. The heavier your ground, the more rainfall you have, and the deeper you put that manure, the more salt you can have. But yeah, I 3,000, 3,500 gallons, that's going to be pushing it at only 6 to 8 inches deep. Okay, so if it was me, I'd either cut back or I'd go deeper. As far as your question getting off the row, we have a bunch of ground. We farm on the contour, and we have some terraces and everything. And so when we first started strip tilling years ago, that was my number one thing. I'm like, well, I don't want to lose a whole bunch of yield on all that when we're going around the contour. So yeah, and so what we did is we purposely planted in between the strip, planted about 5 inches off, and planted right on the strip just to see, you know, how we were doing. As long as we hit anywhere where we had tilled, then we're fine. So if you've got, let's say, an 8-inch-wide, 9-inch-wide tilled strip, anywhere in there, for us at least, has turned out fine. But when you get off, then you're going to be in colder soil, you're going to have slower emergence, and typically that's going to hurt yield at least a little bit. Now, the good news is, as we did that, what we did later then is dug root pits, and we found that even if we planted as far away as you could possibly get, we're directly in the middle, in between the two strips, the roots still found the band. The roots always take the path of least resistance. And so they will get there.
Right.
They'll get to that fertilizer. So I'm just telling you, it's not going to be a disaster for you. And if it was a warm spring and you happen to get good emergence, you clean the row well with your row cleaners, with the planter, and all that, it'll be close. It's just still not going to be 100%, but it'll be close.
So, yeah, I'm assuming, depending on the spring too, if I can run a strip freshener, I'd like to, in order to then, I'm hoping that'll kind of hold the planter in the row also, but back to the salt, is there a number on the manure analysis that you think I should look for that I would start being concerned, you know what I mean?
Yes,
I can base my number of gallons?
I I don't know if there is an exact number that I can tell you. You might want to ask your lab just a little bit on kind of what they think.
Right.
If I remember right off the top of my head with Midwest Labs, I think like on a broadcast basis even, they talk about 500 pounds. But, I mean, it just... You just have to be really careful because, yeah, you start getting too much salt in a dry spring. That's what we worry about most. And then all of a sudden you've done more harm than good. And, I mean, that's not why we're farming.
Well, yeah, that's exactly. That's my whole thing here. I don't want to take two steps forward and one step backwards and trying to do a better job here. So I'm just trying to cover all my bases. So.
Yep. So let's put it this way. It was just like for us, it just became experimentation on trying to figure out, okay, what works, what doesn't work. If you're only going 6 to 8 inches deep and you want to put on 3,500 gallons, to me, yeah, I'm probably not going to do it in the strip. If you want to go 1,000 gallons, maybe 1,500, I would feel pretty good. Or if you started going down deeper, we actually used a Brilliant Zone Commander and we were going 20 inches deep with manure. And then we could put more gallons out there because we're further away from the seed. So, but I'll tell you this, and what you'll find with strip till is since there's no compaction down to the bottom of that strip, those roots get down there really, really fast. So where we might normally say, oh yeah, if you got some fertility down 6 inches, it's going to be a while before the plant finds it. No, the plant's going to find it in like 2 weeks. So, I mean, it's going to be down there immediately.
Sure. Well, that's good to know. And we put on about 40 pounds of N of 28% with our sprayer with pre-emerge.
Okay.
Just to help us last few years with some nitrogen or manure leaching in the fall.
Yep.
Get going early with manure hauling. And
yep.
So I'm kind of hoping that kind of helps hot shot that stuff until it finds that. And yeah, I don't know. That's my goal. We're going to see. Hopefully we have a nice spring that it'll work. So.
Yep, that's for sure. But yeah, just be conservative.
Well, good enough, I appreciate your time, guys.
Yeah, like I say, just be conservative. Don't go overboard. And if you're gonna push the rate, only do it on a few acres and run low rate, and then at least you're not gonna have a disaster.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for calling in.
Good enough. Thanks for the time. Yep. See ya.
All right, get a question that came in from Jeff. He said, I'm in southeast Nebraska, and I'm looking to increase my pH and also add fertilizer to my soil. And I've come across a liquid calcium product that has micros already mixed in. Wondering if you've ever used a product like that. It sounds like an efficient way to add lime and add nutrients at the same time.
The big question would be, what does it cost? If you look at ag lime, or like for us, we use water treatment lime that's free. We just have to apply it. It's hard to beat that price. That's what we worry about with the liquid products. Now, I'm not saying don't use any liquid. A lot of times we'll have people using liquid, a little bit of liquid calcium in furrow or 2x2 or strip till, something like that. I mean, it's just we're typically running low rates. And the reason why is cost. So if the cost is okay, then I can't say I have any big issue with it, but I'm just afraid that your cost is going to get either really high or you're not going to get enough calcium out there to change the pH to the level you want to get it at.
All right, another lime question. This one comes in from, oh shoot, no, I shuffled it. I missed that. Sorry, let's jump in, not a lime one. Burn down of a cover crop. This one comes in from Willie, who said, I've got clover that's knee-high in our wheat stubble. Is it better to burn it off with glyphosate and wait till burn down and then disc it in? Or should I just disc it in while it's green? I don't want to leave it over winter because the ground will never dry out in the spring.
I would absolutely spray it as long as you get it sprayed before you get your first frost. Once you have a frost, then the plant starts to shut down. And what I don't know is if we're talking about an annual clover, a perennial clover, what we're talking about here. If it's just an annual, yeah, maybe you could go and till it. But I would assume we're dealing with something where we'd really like to get that herbicide in, kill it, then till it. Then we don't have to worry about so many plants there next year.
Yep, I agree. I think we're talking perennial here. Got a comment here. It came in from Daniel, too. He said you were talking about tips for high-yielding soybeans. I like locally raised soybeans. And you're right, Daniel. There's a lot of growers that feel like if soybeans were grown in your region, you aren't bringing any problems from anywhere else in the seed.
Yeah, I get that. The big thing I would like is somebody who really heavily fertilized their soybeans so they're full of nutrients. Then I feel like it got more vigorous seed.
Thanks for all the calls and questions today. We really appreciate that. It makes for a fun show, and certainly the discussion on strip till was pretty entertaining as well. Thanks for listening to our program. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio.